Welcome to this edition of the Alabama Historical Association's podcast program. I'm your host, Marty Olaf, and I talk with people who conduct interesting research and do interesting things concerning Alabama history. You can find out more about the Alabama Historical Association, a membership organization devoted to Alabama history, by pointing your browser at our website, www.alabamahistory.net.
Our guests are Ben Hochsbergen, lecturer in the History Department at University of Alabama in Huntsville and cultural resource manager at Redstone Arsenal. He's also the co-author of the article on Huntsville's history in the AHA Spring 2024 newsletter. Our second guest is Dr. Christine Sears, who is chair of the Local Arrangements Committee for the Alabama Historical Association's 2024 meeting in April in Huntsville, and is the busy, busy, busy chair of the History Department at the University of Alabama in Huntsville. Thank you both for joining us.
You're welcome.
Yeah, nice to be here.
Ben, please tell us about Huntsville's history.
Huntsville is probably familiar to most folks as the home of Marshall Space Flight Center and Operation Paperclip, German rocket scientists, especially Wernher von Braun. But I like to tell folks that so much more than just a space history. We've got a vibrant history going all the way back to the late 1700s. And if you factor in a prehistory, we go back all the way to 13,000 BC. In fact, on that topic, we've got the biggest concentration of Paleo-Indian, Paleo-American, Native American sites in North America, and very interesting Native American history. In historic times, it was land claimed first by probably Muscogee people who eventually moved southward, become part of the Creek Confederation. Then that created an opening for the Cherokee to move in from upstream and the Chickasaw to move in from downstream. By the time Euro-American settlers arrived here in the late 1700s, early 1800s, there were some very vibrant Cherokee communities all throughout this area. And then the 19th century happened. It probably another thing many people in Alabama know, but not a lot of folks elsewhere, is that Huntsville was the territorial capital of Alabama Territory after it was cleaved off of Mississippi Territory. The first Alabama Constitution was drafted up here in 1819. The movers and shakers from that time, what we call the Broad River Group, wealthy planters from Northeast Georgia that migrated here en masse and arrived here with all the political connections and capital to integrate themselves into the power structure right off the bat. People like Leroy Pope, the Tates, Fennels, a lot of the big early planter families were derived from this group. Cotton plantation economy just exploded from there on. So, of course, enslavement of African Americans was probably second only to the Black Belt here. Massive enslaved population by the 1850s in North Alabama. Huntsville was the big market town at the time, so a lot of the planters would bring their cotton crop into Cotton Row on the square in Huntsville. From there, it was transported first by the Indian Creek Canal down to the Tennessee River, where it made its way down to the markets in New Orleans. Later, by 1851, the Memphis and Charleston Railroad, which passed through Huntsville, which brings us to the Civil War. The Memphis and Charleston Railroad was a major east-west link across the northern part of the Confederacy. So it was a target of Union forces right out of the boat. So once they cleared the pathway down the Tennessee River, Huntsville was in its sights, and Ormsby Mitchell, the Union general, moved down out of Nashville and captured Huntsville in 1862. And the Union controlled the railroad for most of the remainder of the war and occupied Huntsville almost the entire time. That probably contributed more than anything to a lot of the nice historic architecture that we have in downtown Huntsville and some of the plantation houses in the surrounding community.
You mean that it wasn't a battlefield?
It wasn't a battlefield. Yeah, the Union occupied a lot of these plantations that prevented them from getting burned. But there was a big guerrilla insurgency in the surrounding area. A lot of Confederate bushwhackers were harassing Union troops, sabotaging the railroad and so forth. So that was most of the action we saw in the Civil War. When Hood moved through, coming from the Atlanta area, trying to move towards Nashville, he passed on the south side of the river and tried to cross the river at Decatur. There was a battle there. That was probably our biggest battle within the immediate area. Union won the Civil War. Plantation economy resumed, albeit with a slightly different labor structure, but only slightly different. A lot of the plantations remained in operation. A few went bankrupt. Labor force derived from tenant farmers and sharecroppers for the most part. Few communities popped up, combining some of the free people of color that were here before the Civil War. There's a pretty substantial community of free people of color here before the Civil War. And by the end of the Civil War and emancipation, they'd intermarried with a lot of the enslaved population and established these really extraordinary, mostly African American communities around the margins of Huntsville and off into the countryside, places like Pond Beat and Mullins Flat, where the Stone Arsenal is now.
Bring us on into the 20th century.
By the 1890s, this plantation economy was kind of creating a state of stagnation. The distribution of wealth was very skewed. So you had a lot of widespread poverty, especially out in the countryside. Some of the movers and shakers and the investor class in Huntsville started looking elsewhere for investment into the community. Industrialists started taking notice, and there was some really aggressive boosterism locally to try to bring in some of these sources of capital. People started building cotton mills. You know, the cotton's right here, the cotton market's in town. We've got this great source of commodities. Why don't we start processing some of that here and turning it into marketable goods? I think, what was there, five major cotton mills by 1920s around Huntsville. That became the main driver of the local economy then. By the 1930s, with the Great Depression, some labor unrest, competition with overseas market and things like that, some of these mills started falling on hard times and the local economy started slipping again. And the New Deal programs brought a little relief. TVA was a big one. Rural electrification was a major factor. Relief efforts by the WPA. If you cross a bridge in rural Madison County, there's a very good chance that it's a WPA bridge. A lot of them still out in the country. So that brought a little relief. But the big economic boost the Huntsville is now famous for was in 1941, after the Great Depression, when the War Department was starting to mobilize to address some of this aggression in Europe and Asia. They sent scouts out to find a home for a new chemical warfare installation to produce not just chemical weapons, but chemical munitions and components for everything from radio sets, cleaning agents, and insecticides, things like that. So Huntsville was just one of many places they visited, but it was the first place they visited, and it kind of met all their needs. So some of this booster class that had a new generation of boosters, local business boosters, found out that this person was coming and made sure they were there to meet them and give them the grand tour. They found a place southwest of Huntsville that had a railroad connection, was right on the Tennessee River, so had water transportation, had a somewhat impoverished labor force, or there was a big ready labor force, a lot of people who were available to build the installation, work on the installation. And the cost of real estate was fairly low. Most of it was just small farms by this time, a lot of absentee landowners. By the end of 1941, they started buying up the land and turning it into Redstone Arsenal. Redstone Arsenal, established in 1941, originally three separate installations, but they were all focused on manufacturing and chemical munitions. The chemical warfare depot was for storing all this stuff and transporting it out, doing strategic stockpiles of different raw materials. The Huntsville Arsenal did a lot of the production of, I think, more conventional munitions, if I remember right. And then the Redstone Arsenal was the chemical munitions, and they all got collapsed after World War II into a single installation called Redstone Arsenal.
Huntsville's economic history was more than chemical weapons, though, wasn't it?
So that was a big economic driver from the 1940s. After World War II, the German rocket scientists were brought from Fort Bliss, Texas. They needed a more of a standalone facility that they could do some of the research and development. So Von Braun and his team got brought here. And they established the Army Ballistic Missile Agency, ABMA, and were tasked with designing ballistic missiles for launching conventional warheads on the battlefield. Another thing Huntsville folks don't really like to talk about lots of times, but Von Braun, who was actually a member of the Nazi Party, he was an officer in the SS, and he oversaw the V2 rocket program. His workforce, the production lines and everything, they were run by mostly Jewish concentration camp internees, slave labor. So he's got some baggage, but he knew his stuff when it came to rockets, one of the great minds in rocket engineering. He developed several different rockets for the Army based initially on a V2. So by the late 50s, we were starting to look towards space, competing with the Russians. They'd launched Sputnik, so we felt like we were a step behind. So in 1960, the National Aeronautics and Space Agency, or ACT, was signed. And one of the first NASA installations was carved out of the heart of Redstone Arsenal and became Marshall Space Flight Center, with Von Braun as the first director of that. So that brings us to the modern age. Huntsville's now a major center for space research and development, rocket research development, high technology defense programs. The 2005 Base Realignment and Closure Act expanded a lot of Redstone Arsenal's mission, brought in Army Material Command. So now Redstone Arsenal is a four-star command with AMC at the helm. And with Army Material Command, a lot of the purchasing power of the Army came with them. So a lot of defense contractors started honing in on Huntsville.
That's a long and storied history, for 13,000 years of Huntsville history in 15 minutes. Christine, tell us about the Alabama Historical Association meeting for 2024.
We're going to have a lot of opportunities to visit some of these relevant sites that Ben has talked about, and I appreciate his depth and breadth of history. So if you get a chance to meet him and talk to him at the conference, you should. One place that sort of gets us to the beginning history is that Huntsville Revisited Museum that'll be open for the free tours on Wednesday, started by William Hampton. And I haven't been there, but Ben has. But I understand it's just a really great small collection, particularly related to African Americans, enslaved, and then in freedom.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. William's from Huntsville. He's a Huntsville native, mm-hmm. has a lot of love for his hometown. I think his museum sprung out of a Facebook group that he started called Huntsville Revisited, where people could post memories, post old photos, kind of a nostalgia public history experiment. And it became hugely popular. I don't know how many members it has now, in the thousands. And of course, folks would have memorabilia was in their family, and they started bringing it to William, and eventually reached critical mass, and he wanted to share it with the community. So he got space to put a lot of this stuff on display. It's a great walk down memory lane. The museum is mostly focused on some of the 20th century history, a lot of nostalgia, and it's got some focus on African-American history. It's really a great first stop for understanding a little bit about Huntsville and its culture, and a nice snapshot of its history.
Looking forward to that. Also, for that early history, the Whedon House, which will be part of the Thursday tours, was built in 1819. So the year that the original Constitution was signed in Huntsville, but also a home for the Whedon family, and particularly Maria Howard Whedon, who lived there in the mid 19th century, and she died in 1905. So it was a wonderful spot to get that cotton predominant period into the move to industrialization and the mills and so forth. Howard, as she's known, also did a lot of sketches of formerly enslaved people. So it's a really interesting view that you get of freed people. You don't get it at other places. Most of the other sites are pretty much in that late 19th century boosterism phase that Ben mentioned. The Episcopal Church of the Nativity, which is downtown, was built in 1859 and is a fabulous example of church Gothic architecture, so it's a fun place to visit. The Harrison Brothers Hardware Store was opened in 1897, and it's been continuously operated since then. Now it's operated as a place that you can buy fun food and tchotchkes that are related to Huntsville. They have fabulous printed t-shirts, though, that are really fun. So good place to stop by. And they also have an area that's dedicated towards exhibits related to Huntsville history. It's good if you just want to take a little break from history, and then you can get a little bit of history on the backside of Harrison Brothers.
And Harrison Brothers is on the square, right?
It is.
And also on the square, we've got our oldest building on the tour is the First National Bank building, built in 1838. It's maybe best known to historians as being in the background of a lot of the Civil War era photos. It's been a fixture on the Huntsville Square for well over a century and is privately owned now, but very iconic Greek Revival.
And if you're a historian of banking in Alabama, and there aren't very many people who are, but it's very important.
True.
The Huntsville Bank figures very largely, and this building actually figures largely in that history as well.
And Temple B'nai Shalom is also a beautiful building built in 1876. And Rabbi Schwartz is going to be one of the speakers at the conference. It's just a beautiful, beautiful building. And they've also got little displays about the building and the Jewish community that's been here since the 19th century. So a great place to visit. The St. John African Methodist Episcopal Church is a little newer. It is one of those wonderful things that's a part of American history. This one was founded by William Hooper Council, who was also one of the founders of Alabama A&M. Seems like there's one more 19th century place. So does that bring us up to the
Church of the Nativity?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think I mentioned that.
Okay.
Is it the Gothic Revival? Because otherwise, well, the State Black Archives Research Center at Alabama A&M is also a beautiful 19th century building. It's a Greek Revival like the bank on the Alabama A&M campus, which is lovely. If you go up on the second floor balcony, it's one of the high views that you can get. So you have this fabulous view of everything around. Mm-hmm. So definitely go there. And they've got some really beautiful artworks that you can see only in that space. And then it pretty much goes to the modern period. We've got the Davidson Center for Space Exploration, which again is, I think, what most people know about Huntsville is the space race. They've built what some of us call the aquarium, wonderful exhibit space that talks about everything that led up to the rockets being launched and getting into the Cold War space race. They've got a lot of hands-on things. We're going to have an opportunity to have engineers speak to us if you go and visit who were involved in all this processes. And so they know a lot of things and they're super, super excited about the work that they did, which is fun to hear about. I think those are all the tours that we have that you can go to in the pre-tour Wednesday or the Thursday opening.
Tell us about the meeting's main speaker.
The meeting's main speaker is Dr. Isabella Morales, and she is an amazing speaker. We've heard her before, very engaging. She is going to be talking about her book, Happy Dreams of Freedom. This book won the 2023 Frederick Douglass Prize from the Gilder Lehrman Center, which is a really very high prestige. Also the 2023 Tom Watson Brown Book Award from the Civil War Historical Association and the 2023 William Nelson Cromwell Foundation Book Prize for Legal History. Isabella works currently as an education and exhibit manager at the Stoutsburg Sauerland African American Museum in New Jersey, and she's also an editor and project manager of the Princeton and Slavery Project. She'll be talking to us about the Townsend family, which was a local Madison County family, where one of the brothers was a large plantation owner, but he willed some of his legacy to his enslaved children. She follows their experiences where they move north. You know, they go to Xenia, Ohio, where I have some connections. So it's almost like they follow me. Some of them go to Leavenworth, Kansas. I have family there. She tells the detailed story of how those people were able to make good with that little bit of inheritance they got. They become professional people. Really interesting story that she'll be talking with us about. The conference itself has a lot of local people. You won't be surprised to hear probably one of them is Ben. Ben will be talking about the Jones family. The Joneses were also Black descendants of a large plantation owner, Avalon Plantation, which used to be part of what became UAH much, much later. UAH wasn't founded until 1959. They have that background. So I can't wait to hear more about the Jones family. Katie Stamp, who is one of the local historians. What's her official title?
She is the City of Huntsville Preservation Planner.
Yeah.
So she's involved in historic preservation efforts in a lot of the historic districts and city property.
Also just an amazing speaker, Kate Monroe, Donna Castellano, John Allen, Merritt Fisk, a lot of people who were local, including Rabbi Schwartz, who I mentioned before. And I think the program has something for everyone. We've got 18th century history, 19th century history, 20th century history, women's history. We've got the Alabama's Reverse Freedom Rides, just about anything that you could look at. I'm particularly interested in, because I know nothing about this period, the talk on remembering the fallen, the impact of the Bay of Pigs on families' lives and collective memory. So I think it'll be a really great conference that shows off not only what Huntsville has to offer, but also the rich Alabamian history in general that this AHA conference brings to bear.
And you all aren't the least bit excited about hosting this, are you?
Oh, no.
Well, it's time for us to say goodbye. And I want to thank you both for telling us about the Alabama Historical Association meeting in Huntsville for 2024.
Thanks, Marty.
Thanks, Marty. It's great talking to you.
Thank you for joining us today. This has been another edition of the Alabama Historical Association podcast program. Our music is the traditional tune Whistle By, performed at City Stages in 1996 by James Bryan and Carl Jones. It's provided courtesy of the Alabama Folklife Association, which you can find on the web at alabamafolklife.org.